My name is Gerald Guile. I'm sitting here in my living room by the fireplace trying to think of what to say. I was telling Martine a while ago something I recall that the late Reverend Joan D. Michaud and I had started to try to compile a history of the town of Van Buren. But we didn't get too far with it. But one thing that I do remember that always amazed me was that the famous General Robert E. Lee was a captain in the army at the time of the Aroostook Bloodless War, and he had been up in this part of the country towards Fort Kent at that time, and had traveled on what they call the military road, which is now U.S. number one. Or 1A, I guess it is now, to Haynesville. And in the year, a few years ago, I was working for the National Reemployment Service, and we used to stay at the Haynesville Hotel, they called it, run by an old lady, and her father was living. He was 94 years old at the time. And one night while we were there, we were thinking of how he could have given us a lot of interesting facts about Aroostook County. But he was very deaf, and the other two men that I was working with would question him, but he couldn't hear them. And then he told them, he says, "I think I could understand that young fellow over there. He's French and he moves his lips more. And I think I could understand him." So I started questioning him about early Aroostook. And we spent a very interesting evening with him there. He told us how when he was a boy he'd been captured by the Indians, and that he remembered when the Putnams had first settled in Holton, and how he was used to come on log drives on the St. John River here. Logs that were going from the Allegash country down to St. John, New Brunswick. And one evening, I was sitting down there with my grandmother, Dion, and she was telling me about when she was a little girl, and I remember that she told me that, I never knew that before, but that Powers Creek, which is between St. Leonard's and Grand Falls, that my great-great-grandfather, Powers, had built a log cabin there, and alongside that little stream, and they called it Powers Creek, and it's still that way. Then when the Webster-Ashburton Treaty was settled, making the St. John River the boundary line, he moved over here. And I think, if I recall correctly, it was in Fort Fairfield, and the Indians, either in the spring or in the fall, used to migrate up the river, and great-great-grandfather Powers had if I recall correctly, my grandmother telling me, a very nice team of horses, and they used to come and get him to portage their stuff around Grand Falls, all their equipment, their clothing and stuff, whatever it was, they took with them. And there's a road along the river there that he was driving up that road with them anyway one time, and there was two of the Indians sitting on the back of the wagon. Grandfather came up across this man who was walking along the road, and he made him get on with him, and while they were talking, this man stopped my grandfather, great-grandfather, and he said, "Do you understand their language, the Indian language?" And grandfather said, "No." Well, he says, "Those two there," he says, "are planning to kill the both of us, and then they're going to take your horses." So my grandfather said, "The heck they will," and he turned around, he saw they were relaxed on the back of the wagon, and he raised the reins of the up in the ante, whacked the horses, and of course they gave a jerk and started galloping off, and the Indians fell off the wagon. Well, he galloped the horses through the woods there for about maybe half three quarters of a mile, and then he dumped all that stuff out. And he never would have any Indians around his house after that, because he didn't trust them. And if any of them showed up, he'd take the old rifle from the fireplace, grandmother said, top of the fireplace, and out he'd go and chase them away. But I remember grandmother telling me that she remembered when she was a little girl and the Indian used to go there, and they'd sit on the kitchen floor all around a wooden bowl, and they'd all eat out of this wooden bowl. And I'd spend the most enjoyable evening there with my grandmother. She'd never said anything about those things before, and it interested me very much. Martin wants me to talk about the Gagnon family now. There's one thing that, just before I started, I thought of that. When we tell my mother that we were going to grandma's or grandpa's, that meant her family. And if we said Papir or Mamir, it was at my father's family, because my mother's family all spoke English in the house, and my father's family all spoke French. Well, my grandfather, Gagnon, operated a hardware store here, a four-story hardware store in town, and I used to enjoy going there Saturday afternoon and listening to some of the farmers talk there. And I remember that they would come in with loads of potatoes on their sleds in the wintertime to the potato houses, and then they'd have a bag of hay for the horses, and after they'd unloaded their potatoes, and I don't think the sleds at that time held much more than 12 or 14 barrels of potatoes, and they would put the horses in back of the store there and give them the hay, and then they'd come into the store and they'd buy a can of tomatoes or a can of sardines, and usually bring a spoon with them or a fork, buy some crackers. Grandfather had some groceries in there, and sit on the floor and eat their lunch from this can of tomatoes and the crackers. And that used to look so good. By golly, that looked good. And I'd go home and I'd do the same thing. It didn't taste half as good as when I saw them eating it. It looked so good. But I remember, it's funny how buildings will change things in a way. I remember when I was a kid delivering orders in Keegan from the store. And right opposite where the old pulp mill was, there was always a big snowbank there. And of course, roads weren't plowed then. They were just tapped down with these big rollers that they used to put four or five teams of horses on and try to tap the snow down, hard pack it so that the horses could walk on it. And there was a two-story building right across from where the old pulp mill was there. And I remember that the road in the wintertime would build up to the height of the second story of the porch. You'd be just even with the second porch. Then there's a fellow by the name of Mashatad came here, and he started a dairy farm right there on the Castelgi farm between Keegan and Van Buren. And he built a big barn to keep the cattle in the wintertime. And after that barn was built, the snow never piled up in the road there again. And I never forgot that. But I remember at grandfather's store, Saturday afternoons when the farmers would come in and talk about different things. And I recall one time one fellow said to this Fred Cody, he says, well, Fred, he said, this is long in March, I think. And he told Fred, he said, well, Fred, we lost our old chum so-and-so a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? I don't remember what the name of the chap was. Fred says, that's so? What happened to him? Well, he says, he died of some kind of fever. And Fred says, yeah, well, he says, that's what you get for washing your body in the wintertime. Of course, this was said in French, which was, seems a little funnier that way. Grandfather Gagnon was quite a politician, very good Democrat, and he went to the legislature, I think, in 1913, and back again in 1931. And I remember the first time he, I don't remember 1913, but I remember being told that he had had a bridge built over the, I think it's the Madawaska Stream between Van Buren and Caribou. There's no bridge, but when the first time he went to the legislature, I think he got them to build a bridge there. And it was steel, but the flooring in it was planks. And every time you rode over that bridge, the planks would rumble something terrible, as if we'd, as if they weren't nailed down. And I remember a lot of people used to say, Henry got us a bridge and the planks, but he never got the nails to nail the planks down. They sound all loose on there. He had quite a sense of humor. I remember one time this fella coming in and a little derby on his head and came from across the river, and he was came in and he said, "How do you do, Mr. Gagnon?" And Grandfather said, "How do you do, sir?" He says, "Take a chair." And the fellow said, well, he was, they'd opened up a little branch bank, Bank of Montreal, I think it was, in Quisibis, here across the river, and there was, he was the manager there, apparently, but I guess he was everything else, too, the bookkeeper and the janitor and everything. It was just a little bit of a bank. So he told my grandfather, he says, I'm, introduced himself, and he says, I'm manager of the bank in Quisibis. And Grandfather says, that's so, sir? He says, take two chairs. But the only time I ever saw my grandfather mad, is he used to sit in the office and read the paper, and lean his, the chair against the wall, and he'd fall asleep sometimes and drop the paper in his face. And a salesman came in there one time and, for the fun of it, set fire to the newspaper. Of course, woke Grandfather up, and the newspaper was on fire, which was a very foolish thing to do. He could have scarred Grandfather, but this practical joker didn't realize the seriousness of his joke, I guess. But anyway, and Grandfather threw the paper on the floor, and it burnt. Then my father, one of my uncles, came in the office, and the salesman was kind of shaken up. He didn't think it would, that would flare up like that. And oh, was my grandfather mad. And he kicked him out of the store and told him never to come in there again. So this guy lost a good account through one of his foolish tricks. Grandfather had, Gagnon had five daughters, and four of them were Good Shepherd sisters. Two of them are dead now. Sister St. Alice, who is 85, is still living, and the youngest one of the girls, Sister Germaine Gagnon, is in Biddeford now. He had five sons. The only one that's gone now is my dad, and the others are all living in Florida. They invited us to go down, and I wish we could go, but we can't see our way clear now. Maybe later on. Coming back to the Dion side of the family, my grandfather Dion used to drag me around with him all the time, especially after he was through working at the mill when he retired. And if he'd go up to Uncle John's camp with the horse to get some firewood, or I was dragging me around with him all the time. But I remember one Easter week that he wasn't too well, and he wanted to go out, because the old folks used to go out and get Easter water on Easter morning. And grandmother asked me if I'd go with him next morning, and I said, yes, I would. So Easter morning, I woke up, my mother was shaking my shoulder and saying that it was time for me to get up to go with Grandpa to get some Easter water. And I looked at the clock and it was 3:30, and I made up my mind right then and there that going after this Easter water was for the birds. That was a little too early for me. And anyway, we went and got some Easter water, Grandfather and I. When I got downstairs, there he was waiting, horse and buggy. And we came down to the Violet Brook and got some Easter water. And I've often wondered what they did with the stuff. Whether they drank it or rubbed themselves with it, I don't know. I never asked, but that was the one and only time I ever went after Easter water. But Grandfather Dion always, like I said, always dragged me around with him, and we used to go get fir and spruce boughs in the fall to bank the house with, and then in the spring, why, we'd haul all that up, all that to the dump. And the horse he had was a spirited little animal, and Grandfather would get a little impatient with him, and the horse needed exercise. He wasn't getting the exercise he should be getting. But one night, I guess the snow had been drifting in the roads. Anyway, my grandmother called me up and told me that the horse came in, but Grandfather wasn't with him, and that something must have happened, that he must have fallen out of the sled or something. So she asked me if I'd go and see where he was. So I went up to the house and turned the horse around and headed towards the mill. And sure enough, I met Grandfather coming. He had the robe was missing. I had noticed the robe was missing and the whip. And he had the robe in one hand and the whip in the other, and he was madder than a wet hen. I guess he'd fallen asleep in the sled, and going over a snowdrift or something, the sled toppled over something. He fell over, and somehow it righted itself, and the horse came home. So Grandmother, of course, was quite concerned, and that's why I had gone after him. And oh boy, was he mad.